All right, well, small group tonight, so you guys in the back can move up if you want to. I know you don't want to, but you could. So, all right, so we are in Job chapter 8. Remember what we read last week. We saw Job respond to Eliphaz, and basically he told him, you know, you guys are not a lot of help. He said, you know, you're not listening to me. I want you to look at me, and I want you to tell me what it is that how it is that you think I'm sinning, because I don't think I'm sinning. He said, now I'm righteous, and that does not mean I'm not a sinner. It means I have integrity. If I was sinning, I would tell you. We're going to see that again. If I was sinning, I would confess it to God. So we're going to see that again tonight. But what now we're going to see, actually we'll see it next week, I worked on tonight, we'll see Bildad tonight. So Bildad is another one of his friends. Remember, they've been there sitting with Job. He and Zophar have been sitting there nodding along with everything that Eliphaz said. And tonight, it's Bildad's time to speak. So just remember, again, it's one of the speakers. God condemns basically the speech of all three of them in Job 42:7. But tonight, again, we're going to see, just like with Eliphaz, Bildad has a lot of truth in what he says. But he doesn't have all the truth. And we've talked about how dangerous that is. And what Bildad does is he picks out one attribute of God. Now, let me ask you this before we get started. If I was going to ask you to pick one attribute of God that you were going to hang all of your life on, all of your life, every single thing in your life, what attribute would you pick? Teresa? The character of God? Which character, though? I only get one. So you're going to go with mercy, right? How many would go with mercy? How many of you would go with just pure, downright justice? Anybody? No, we're all sitting on our hands on that one, aren't we? Why do we do that? Why would we sit? I think most of us would pick mercy because we know we need it, right? What do we need justice in our lives? We do. We do. So let's see tonight. You're going to hear a lot about justice tonight. So Bildad, Job chapter 8 starts off. Then Bildad the Shuhite answered and said, so he's listened to Job. You know, Job said, just look at me. Just tell me. I want you to teach me. Then Bildad says in verse 2, how long will you speak these things and the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? Boy, that's caring, wasn't it? Do you understand what he's saying? Hey, windbag. That's what he's saying. You're full of hot air. How long are you going to just talk like the wind is blowing? Are you not listening to what you're saying? So he started off much more aggressively, much more assertive than even Eliphaz did. Eliphaz started off, and it took him a couple of comments to get rude. But Bildad just jumps right in and says, how long are you going to keep talking like the blowing wind? Then in verse 3, this is the premise of Bildad's whole argument. He says, you get what you deserve. This is what I've called it, the system at its simplest. The premise of Bildad is you get what you deserve. In verse 3, he says, does God subvert judgment? Does God get around judgment? Or does the Almighty pervert justice? And the answer to that is obviously no. So he's saying that God is just, and that is the element of God's character that he has decided to hang his hat on. The only element of God's character that he has decided to hang his hat on. And we're going to see that he does this not because he knows God, but because it's tradition. Now, you guys remember what Eliphaz was basing his comments to Job on? Worldly wisdom. It was his experience and his observations based on worldly wisdom. He says, you know, I've seen this happen. I've investigated it. And this is the way things go. You reap what you sow. Bildad's saying the same thing, except he's getting even more direct. You get what you deserve. Now, how many people today, I mean, hopefully nobody in this church, but how many people in the world today follow that premise, you get what you deserve? A lot of them. How many people will actually say, I want what I deserve?
That's the good stuff they're talking about.
Ah, it is. I want what's coming to me. Right? So I should have gotten that promotion. I should have gotten that raise. I want what's coming to me. And you know what that philosophy does, that works philosophy? It carries over to their salvation thoughts. If you think that you deserve everything you get, we talked this morning in our new teen class, we're starting off something new, talking about respectable sins, those sins that we commit that people aren't really sure they're sin sometimes. And we went through a lot of behaviors, and one of those is, by gosh, I deserve it. I'm entitled. We hear that word a lot today too, right? So, you know, you will hear people say, I want to get what I deserve. I do not want what I deserve. Because as a sinner, what is it that we deserve? Yeah. And we talked about this morning too. How many sins do we have to commit in order for God to be justified in putting us to death without Jesus Christ? One. That's right. Jonas, does it have to be a big one like those murderers and things? No. It can be gossip. Gossip. It can be envy. Because James 2:10 tells us that when we break one of God's commands, how many do we break? We break them all. So it doesn't take much. And that's what the focus of this respectable sin study is. And it's going to be really fun. But what he's saying here is, look, God is just. And look, we don't want just his justice. We shouldn't want just his justice. But we do want him to be just. Yes. And we're going to talk about that at the end. But if God were all justice, we'd all be dead. Okay? If God were all mercy, we'd all be out here doing our sin thing. So it's a unique combination that you know, Teresa used the word, I'm choosing God's character. His character is made up of all of those things. Remember last year, I think it was, we went through all the attributes of God. We went through every single one of them and identified what they were and studied them. You can't just pick out one and say, you know, that's the one I'm going to go with, because we don't really want that. So he says in verse 4, listen to this one. If your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgressions. So somebody tell me what that means. The reason your sons are dead and killed was because they... And we know as a fact that that is not true. Because God told us in Job 1, right? And we know for a fact that Job is righteous. That Job is going through all of this not because he sinned, but because God has chosen him for the honor of showing Satan that the prosperity gospel is a bunch of bunk. But you see what Bildad's doing? He's doing this. He's saying, look, God is just. And since God will not reject a blameless man, or will not reject a blameless man, nor will he uphold the weak, and we're going to get to that in verse 20, the calamity that has befallen you is simply what you deserve. You brought this on yourself. It's God's justice in action. Well, yes. And you know what? We can fool ourselves sometimes. This shouldn't happen to me, right? I don't deserve this. Why is God letting this happen to me? We can fool ourselves sometimes, but Job, this is really important. That's why we spend a lot of time studying going into this. Job's not fooling himself. When Job says later, now he says, I'm a sinner. But he says, I've confessed my sin. Why won't you forgive me of what I'm going through now that, you know, maybe I don't know what it is. We heard that last week. Maybe it's that secret sin that David talked about. Maybe it's that unknown sin. Maybe I don't even realize I'm doing it. God, you know, what's going on? Why won't you forgive me? And but that's the key word, just in case. Okay? He did it just in case they had committed some sin that they weren't confessing. So we need to understand Job was righteous. So when Bildad tells him this, you're getting what you deserve, and he's going to fight back next week. Oh boy, is he going to fight back. But he's justified in that. He's not fooling himself. So we're going to get really deep into this, and we're going to talk about this. But now let me ask you this. When you say God is just to society, to the world at large, what are the responses that you get back from them?
Then why did he let someone die?
Mm-hmm. That's one. Okay. What else do you get?
Why did he let bad things happen?
Yeah. We're going to talk about that in a couple of weeks, but you get those responses. Does the world believe that God is just? No. They don't. Not by our definition of justice. Does the world believe that God is fair? No. What does fairness mean to you?
Getting what I want.
Okay, well, that's an honest answer. What does it mean to some people? That obviously is a good answer, but what does fairness mean to most people?
Equal.
Can you be? How many of you have ever treated your children differently, each child differently? Were you being unfair to them? No, you're not. Why not? Because each child's different. Each situation is different. You know, the same situation 5 years later can be different. I remember when, you know, Eddie said, you know, when he hits 13, you better do this to Isaiah. So she's 18, he's 13. You didn't do that to him. Well, we live in a different town, you know, and all these kind of explanations. But we need to understand that fairness does not equal equality. So when we sit here and we think about God being fair and God being just, he is pure justice. But as you guys have said, he has these other attributes that temper that justice, but they don't really take the justice away. Let's talk about the cross, okay? God said, the soul that sinneth, it shall die. The penalty of sin is what? Did God punish your sin by death? Yes, he did. Whose death? Jesus. He punished Jesus for the death of every single sinner. There's an old story about a tribe in one of these Aboriginal islands where the king had a problem. You know, little island, but the king had a major problem. There was a thief among the people. They'd never had a thief among the people. But somebody was stealing a lot of stuff. So he kept trying to find them, never could find out who it was. And finally he puts out an edict that says, when you find who this person is, we're going to lash them 40 times. So guess what? They found out who it was. It was his 87-year-old mother. So the day comes for the 87-year-old woman to be lashed 40 times. They take her up and they tie her to this post in the middle of town. And they put her arms around the post and they're getting ready to whip her. And they're all waiting because they know he's not going to let her get whipped. Who's going to let their 87-year-old mother get whipped? She wouldn't survive, right? So what do you think the king did? King, he's sitting there. And they pull that back. He goes, hold. He gets up. He goes and he wraps his arms around his mother. He says, go ahead. He took her lashes. So the punishment was meted out. Just like the punishment of sin was meted out. Now, was God completely just in dealing with your sin? Yes. Even though you didn't personally pay for it? Yes. Was God completely merciful in dealing with your sin? Oh, yes. Let's think about some of those other attributes. Did God show grace in dealing with your sin? Yes. Did he show love in dealing with your sin? Yes. I mean, any attribute you can think, and I want you to think about this. Think about that cross. Every single attribute of God came together at that cross. Justice, mercy, anger, love, all of those righteousness. He couldn't look on sin, so what did he do? Turned. My God, why have you forsaken me? Because I'm not going to look with approval on sin, even though you're my son. I can't look with approval on you. So we just need to understand that God is not just about justice, even though he is about justice. He's not all about justice. So that's where Bildad gets it wrong. Okay? Because Bildad would say, the only thing that matters is justice. Y'all know anybody like that? Revenge, for instance. Revenge is so deep in their hearts, so much in their minds, that they will not look at any other thing. All they want is that revenge. Y'all know, y'all ever heard of anybody like that? Versus those people that, you know, a shooter comes into the school and shoots up the school, they pray for the forgiveness of those shooters. It's an amazing difference. But that's what Bildad's going to do. That's the entire speech he's going to give. It's an incomplete view of God, but it sounds good because it's part right. And God's going to say, you don't know me. And we know that because we don't want to know a God that is just. All right, so look at verse 5. Verse 5 and 7, they go together. And I want you to tell me who this sounds like again. You should hear it. You should be getting this theme over and over again. Bildad says, if you would earnestly seek God and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you were pure and upright, surely now he would awake for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place. Though your beginning was small, your latter end would increase abundantly. What are we talking about again? I see heads nodding. We're talking about the prosperity gospel again, aren't we? He's saying, if you will just seek God, everything's going to be okay. And that's just not true. Right? If you were pure and upright, is Job pure and upright according to God? Yes, he is. Okay? So Job's sitting there going, well, wait a minute now. Because actually, in the next chapter, you'll see Job understands this system. He doesn't agree with it, but he understands it, just like we can understand it. We understand this is the world system. You get what you deserve. But he says, God would prosper you. All you got to do is reach out, seek God, confess, and he's going to prosper you. That's why you should worship him. It's Satan all over again. And it's subtle. So we've already seen the satanic prosperity through Eliphaz. We're seeing it now through Bildad. We're going to see it through the other friend. We're going to see it through Elihu. It keeps coming up. And of course, we saw it through Satan. It's all through this book. And Job is the picture study of why it can't work. Jesus told us it wouldn't work. But Job is the real life study. Job is pure and upright. He is upstanding. God calls him righteous. That means he has integrity. What he says is right. But yet he still suffers. And he's going to want to know why. Next week is a big, big questioning of God. Why? And we can do that. But that verses 5 to 7 tell us once again that this suffering, you just can't look at it and go, well, it'll all be alleviated. We can turn to Romans 8, 18. Turn over there. I could pick any of these verses, but Paul writes and he says this. He says, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. So Paul understands just what Jesus said. You're going to suffer. And it's not the fact that God's being just all the time. Sometimes it's because there's dirty, rotten people in the world and they do mean things to us. It's called sin. Now, who is ultimately still in control, though, even though all this sin is abounding? Who's in control? Who? God is still in control. Yep. We're going to really see that a lot next week when Job starts responding to Bildad. But remember, God is in control. Why did Satan tempt Job? Who brought up the idea? God did. God, never, ever forget that. You know, you wonder what, I know this is a little bit flippant, I don't mean it that way, but you kind of wonder what Job did when he got to heaven. When he learned all this, he goes, would you, really? You know, but then he probably said, thank you, Lord, for giving me the opportunity to prove this. But there's a part of me that goes, really? Couldn't you have picked somebody else? What did Jesus tell Peter when Satan wanted to sift him? Yeah, he said, Satan desires to sift you like wheat, but I'm going to keep him from doing that? No, that's not what he said. He said, but I've prayed for you that when you return, meaning you're going to go with Satan, you'll strengthen your brothers. There was reason for all of this. So the prosperity gospel does not work. Let's look in verse 8. And here he's going to give, verse 8 through 10, Bildad is going to give his evidence. And he's going to rely on tradition. He says, for inquire, please, of the former age and consider the things discovered by their fathers. For we were born yesterday and know nothing. Because our days on earth are a shadow, will they not teach you and tell you and utter words from their heart? So he's saying, look, you just need to look at what the ancients taught. The ancients all taught, he says, this thing, you get what you deserve. Is that what the ancients all taught? There's one ancient that didn't teach that. Look at Ephesians 1:4. He says in Ephesians 1:4, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us, this is verse 3, with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ, just as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love. So had he listened, what would Bildad have known about Adam and Eve? Did Adam and Eve pay the penalty for their sin? Yes, they got kicked out of the Garden of Eden. But what did God do right before he kicked them out of the Garden of Eden? They were naked. What did he do? He clothed them. Yeah, and he clothed them. And he promised them the Messiah, and he clothed them. He covered their nakedness. You know, Bildad didn't think about that. Was that just of God, or was that excusing sin? You know, in Bildad's view, that would be excusing sin. They got away with it. That's not fair. That's not just. So he says, you look back at what the ancients taught, and you will see that it's all about getting what you deserve. This, just listen to the old folks. Listen to the elders. And Bildad's wrong again. Now, there were a lot of elders that said that. There are a lot of elders that still say that. And then he turns in verses 11 through 19, he turns to the cause and effect of nature. And he's saying that, you know, these old ancients, they used these things to show us, to teach us how these things work, these natural causes. So you get what you deserve is a natural cause. It's kind of like you reap what you sow. So let's look at this. In verse 11, it goes, can the papyrus grow up without a marsh? Can the reeds flourish without water? While it is yet green and not cut down, it withers before any other plant. So are the paths of all those who forget God. That is, they wither and they're cut down. And the hope of the hypocrite shall perish, whose confidence shall be cut off and whose trust is a spider's web. He leans on his house, but it does not stand. He holds it fast, but it does not endure. He grows green in the sun, and his branches spread out in his garden. His roots wrap around the rock heap and look for a place in the stones. If he is destroyed from this place, then it will deny him, saying, I haven't even seen you. So, a little hard to understand, but what he's doing, he's making two big analogies here. And he's talking about cause and effect. And he's saying, first of all, if you withhold something from God, if you forget God, and if you're a hypocrite before God, you're going to wither, you're going to dry up, you're going to be just like that papyrus plant that is going to die if it doesn't live in the marsh. You're going to be just like the reeds that cannot live without water. You're going to wither like, we don't have flowers today, you're going to wither like flowers without water. Now, is that true? It's true. Okay. So it's another one of those things that sounds pretty good, but he's accusing Job of hypocrisy. He's accusing Job of covering something up. Because remember, Job has proclaimed his innocence. He's proclaimed that he did not sin and not confess it. Now, Job said, I'm a sinner. He's already said that. So understand, he is not saying that I have not sinned. He's saying, I do not have any unconfessed sin. Okay? So he understands. But Bildad is calling him a hypocrite. As we talked about Wednesday night, a mask wearer, a Greek actor with that clay mask on. And you have two faces, one with the mask, one without the mask. So that's one thing. Then he moves to this analogy about in verses 14 to 19. He's talking about a spider's web. Now, how flimsy, well, let me ask you this. Is a spider's web strong, first of all? Yes. Yeah, real strong. But what if a man leans on it? Is it going to stand up to the man? No. So he says, you know, you're basically, you've got the confidence like a spider's web. It's, you know, it looks strong, it's there, but you're leaning on it, it's not going to endure. It's going to fall apart. So you had this fake confidence, and it's going to fall apart because of the way you've acted. Remember, Eliphaz told him last week, your words helped a lot of people, but you need to practice what you preach. Bildad's saying the same thing. You've built this house, and it's got this great pretty spider web on it that's strong to the spider, but it's not to you. It's going to fall apart. And then he says, it's going to be just like this plant. Look down in verse 18. You rip up this plant. Now, this plant is strong. It's grown green in the sun. Verse 16, its branches have spread out in the garden. Its roots are around this rock heap, and it looks for a place in the stones. But when you yank that plant up by its roots, what's going to happen to the plant? It's going to die. So what he's saying now is something's happened to your root system. This is the way plants are. When it dies, it's because it's been ripped up by the root. And who would rip up a good, healthy plant? Anybody? Yeah, well that. But you know, normally we don't tear up good, healthy plants. We tear up things that are dying. We rip up things that are dying and we replace them. Bildad's point is, nobody's going to rip up, and particularly God is not going to destroy a plant unless there's something wrong with its root system. When its root system goes bad, it's time to rip it up. And it's going to be as if you never even saw the plant. You guys see that? And that's what he's saying. He says, there's something wrong in your life that you're not confessing, that you're saying is you know, unfair to God or unfair by God. And you're just wrong. God wouldn't do this to you if you really were righteous, like you say. God wouldn't do this to you if you really had not sinned. So something must be wrong with you. Okay? So you get what he's saying. He started out, God's just. If you'd have just, if you just fess up, he'd make everything okay, which we know is not right. I'm basing all of my opinions on the elders that we've studied for hundreds of years, and they've given us these examples from nature. They give us, you know, the reed dries up without water. The spider web can stand up to spiders, but it can't stand up to men. And if your tree's dying, it's because there's a problem with the roots. That's really what he's saying. And he's saying, you got all those problems, my friend. There's something wrong in your life. You've built a false web. You've built something that you think is strong, but it's not when it really comes to pressure. And you are hiding something from God. You're withholding this confession. You're withholding admitting this sin from God. And because of that, he's punishing you. He's letting you wither and dry up just like the papyrus without water. So we all understand that. And Deborah was saying how strong Job must have been emotionally. Job is going to have his moments. You know, we already saw that he went on this tirade in chapter 3, but he's already admitted, well, okay, I realize I spoke rashly. Next week when he's responding to Bildad, look, he lets Bildad have it. I mean, he just point blank tells Bildad, you're wrong, here's why. But in so doing, he goes through this whole thought process and he ends up essentially saying, Deborah may have seen the outline for next week, says, I need Jesus Christ. Now, he doesn't name him by name, but when we get into the next two chapters, chapters 9 and 10, he's going to describe Jesus Christ to a T. He's going to describe this person who he needs desperately because it's the only way he can see around this problem. And he's going to do that directly in response to Bildad because Job understands this philosophy. In fact, if you look over in just the first verse, we won't go very far. Chapter 9, verse 2. Just the first part. Then Job answered and said, truly, I know it is so. Now, what Job's saying there is not, I know you're right. He's saying, I know that's what the ancients teach. I know that's the world philosophy. I know you guys think you get what you deserve. But understand, he's going to launch back at him. But think, yeah, I mean, he had a tough time. He's already told his friends, y'all are worthless. You know, you won't even look at me. You're not comforting me a bit. He's going to go on next week about, you know, you've made it. He's going to tell them next week, you're making it worse. You know, you came here and you tried to help, but you're making it worse.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'd be, just a heap of nothing.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. We keep hearing Job ask God why, right? There's something we need to learn about that, about Job. Who's he asking why? We just said it. God. What does that tell you still about Job? Despite being the emotional ruin that he is, despite being physically ruined, where's his hope still? God. Now, it may be a glimmer, dim hope, right? But he still got it. John the Baptist was in jail. You know, he's going to be beheaded by Herod. He thinks, well, man, I was the precursor to Jesus. I mean, surely to goodness, I get some special treatment here. Not this kind of special treatment. I want the good kind of special treatment. So what did he do? Did he go out and he ask Herod about what he thought about Jesus? No. He sent his disciples to Jesus and said, are you the one that we thought you were, or do we need to look for another? And what did Jesus do in response? He didn't really answer them. He said, he let the disciples stay around for a couple of days and he said, now tell me what you've seen, Well, we've seen you heal the blind. We've seen you heal the lame. We've seen you do miracles. We've seen you, you know, set captive, all those things that God, that Jesus is supposed to do. He said, then you go back and tell John. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And when John got that, you know what John did? I'm good. You don't hear John complaining anymore. And when Job gets his answer, now he's not going to quite be as easy to placate as John, okay? But when Job gets his answer, he's going to realize, I can't, there's nothing I could say. He's actually going to start realizing that next week. In chapters 9 and 10, he's going to start realizing, what could I possibly say to this awesome God? If you gave me the chance to argue with him, what would I say? He knows it all anyway. He created me like I am. What would I say? But that's kind of where we're going. So again, understand, Job's struggling, but he's got that hope. So even though he's emotionally downtrodden, his hope is still in the Lord.
Because they were telling him so strongly, and he was already in such a weak condition, physically and emotionally, but he just kept saying no.
Mm-hmm. You guys hear that in the back? You know, do we cave in when we get tired? Sure we do. I mean, and you can imagine Job. I mean, he was exhausted, physically in pain, but he didn't cave in. That's another lesson for us. We can take so much from this book that we don't normally think about. We can take that lesson too. Keep on, just like we talked about this morning. You think the persistent widow and Job would get along? I think so. You know, she kept on keeping on. Kept on bugging the judge. And she finally got what she was asking for. Job kept on bugging God till he got more than he asked for. Okay? And to our benefit. So look now in verse 20. This is the basic premise that we talked about here. Behold, God will not cast away the blameless, nor will he uphold the evildoers. So, is that true? No. Somebody turn to Romans chapter 5, verse 8. Well, let's all turn there. God will not cast away the blameless, nor will he uphold the evildoers. Evildoers could be called what? Sinners, right? Okay. So let's read Romans 5, 8 and 9. With Bildad's statement in mind, behold, God will not cast away the blameless, nor will he uphold the evildoers. Paul writes to the Romans, but God demonstrates his own love toward us that while we were still evildoers, sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, having now been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from the wrath to come. So let me ask you this. If Bildad is right, that God will not uphold the evildoers, how does Romans 5:8 work? It doesn't. So Bildad, as God says in 42:7, is just wrong. God makes it rain on the just and the unjust, right? He gives light to the just and the unjust. There is a component of God's mercy. Remember, all Bildad's thinking about is God's justice. There's a component of God's mercy that allows him to support the wicked. Do you know that the Bible tells us that God weeps over the death of the wicked? Did you know that? Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. We know that one. We like that one. But God weeps over the death of the wicked. Why? Does God want anybody to go to hell? No, he doesn't. Yeah. That's why he's still offering. That's why his word is still out there. He does not want anyone to perish. But, you know, we get this idea that, well, man, you know, he ought to be come down here and, you know, bang the gavel, do this kind of thing. And that's just not the way God works. And we ought to be really, really, really happy that he doesn't work that way. Just imagine if you sinned, and the very first time you sinned, there was this little bell that rang. Ding, and you're like, oh, no. My turn to go. Just like Clarence, you know, angel gets his wings. But, which is not biblical, by the way. As bad theology was the example, I probably need to explain that since it's being recorded. So, angels don't get their wings, they have them. But anyway, and men don't become angels, that's a bigger theological problem. But the issue here is that, you know, Bildad thinks it's all about justice. Now let me ask you this. God will not cast away the blameless. Who is blameless? No one. That's right. You're in Romans. Jump over to Romans 3:10. As it is written in the Psalms and in the Ecclesiastes from the preacher, there is none righteous, no, not one. So the premise that God will not cast away the blameless isn't right either, because there's no blameless to cast away. Right? And Bildad doesn't get that. Bildad's building his whole philosophy on this idea that people can be good enough to be approved of by God. Just themselves. And we know that is false. We know that is a false philosophy. So the final point tonight we'll look at is, yes, God is a God of justice, but he is also a God of mercy, of grace, of love, of compassion, of patience. You can plug any two words you want to plug in there. Whatever's speaking to you tonight, that's what God does. Bildad doesn't know God. Bildad knows his tradition. Bildad knows what the world teaches. And Bildad, just like Eliphaz, has seen enough that he thinks all these analogies and all these stories about nature and, you know, cause and effect, they work. Peter talked to some people like that. You know, he said in the last days there's going to be scoffers that come. And the scoffers are going to say, oh, it all works like it's always worked. It's the natural law. And he says, there's two things I want you to remember. And these are two things that where God changed what we would call natural law, where God directly intervened in human history. Number one, he created us and he created the world. That's 1 Peter. Okay? Then the other thing he says is, you guys that went to the ark, remember the flood. It doesn't just work like it's always worked. God changes things. Who made the laws of nature? Yeah, so you think he could tweak them whenever he wanted to? Do you know that there's recorded in one of the Israeli battles or Jewish battles a day when literally the sun did not set? It stayed a day? They have gone back scientifically and they've proven that that happened. How'd that happen? God did it. That's the only way. There is literally no other way for that. The world just does not stop. Can't happen unless God does it. But that's what Bildad's saying. You get what you deserve. The only thing that God is this God of justice. Everybody knows that, dude, and you ought to know it too. And Job is sitting there going, well, you have been a great help. You've called me a windbag. You've told me that I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know this God. Now, he doesn't have as much knowledge as we do. And when we see his response to Bildad next week, and when you see what he cries out for, when he describes Jesus Christ perfectly, what he needs in his life, I mean, he knows God pretty well. That's what you're going to come to the conclusion of. So that's it for tonight, but that is what we need to be careful of. We need to obviously not be the kind of friend that says, hey, you get what you deserve and you're a windbag. You know, we can certainly say we would never say that, but we kind of do that sometimes. And we need to be really, really careful. The world does that too.